Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to another episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito. And as usual, I'm joined by a good friend. I call him a mentor because he is a mentor. He's taught me a lot. He's taught me a lot of things about football, about doing these types of broadcasts. And he is not only a good friend of mine, he is also a fan of a team that is in first place. And I have to continually refer to them as the first place New York Giants. It's Mr. Joe Tufaro. So, Joe, how are we doing today?
Good. I think it's exciting that you're able to continue calling them that. It really does make my day. It's they played a lot better this week, and you know there's a little bit of light coming over the hill after the bye. Maybe we see a little sighting of Victor Cruz. Maybe we see a little Will Beatty sighting. Maybe we and shore up the right side of that offensive line. Maybe we now you've seen JPP back, and he actually looked very good on Sunday for the time he played, and so hopefully they get stronger, because coming down the end of the season, they have some key games. One of them against your team, against teams like Minnesota. You know, games they're going to have to win that are not gimmies by any stretch of the imagination. So hopefully they're getting stronger at the right time.
Yeah, you know, it was. I mean, I was actually covering the Jets game. We're going to obviously get into the Jets a little bit with Rex Ryan coming back in a little while after we do kind of a review. But a lot of excitement this week, Joe, in the NFL. A lot of exciting games, games that have big implications upon the playoffs moving forward down the stretch of the season, with tiebreakers, exciting games, overtime games, some things that maybe some outcomes that you didn't expect. Some teams maybe the Bears playing hard, even the Chargers are out of it. But how about the Titans? They fire their coach. They go and they beat the Saints, who have been in a little bit of a roll. So a couple things that went on there. I thought it was a very exciting week of football from what I heard from people. They were thrilled with kind of the way the games went. Overtime game in Minnesota, that was a big game for both teams. We're going to get into that game a little bit too. So why don't we kind of kick things off here with – and we're going to discuss the games, but we're also going to discuss a little bit about some of the injury situations. And Joe and I do this quite often because obviously injuries play a key part in what happens to a team during an NFL season. And obviously the Cowboys, great example with Tony Romo being out for a number of weeks now. But Joe, the Indianapolis Colts, I mean, again – They fired their offensive coordinator. He's kind of the scapegoat, Pep Hamilton, who had been with Andrew Luck in the days back in Stanford. And, you thought maybe Chuck Pagano was on the hot seat. And here was a game coming in to their place with the Denver Broncos, the then undefeated Denver Broncos. And you know what? The Colts needed a win in the worst way, and they got it. And it was a very exciting game, very intriguing game. But now Andrew Luck is out. The estimate is 2 to 6 weeks. I'm going to guess it's going to be about 4 to 5 weeks, given my medical expertise. But lacerated kidney, some abdominal issues. And now, Matt Hasselbeck, who's done a pretty decent job filling in, is going to kind of handle the load there. But, do you think that they can weather the storm here without Andrew Luck? They are in first place. I mean, the division is putrid. You have Houston at 3-5. They're going up against the Bengals at Cincinnati, the undefeated Bengals at Cincinnati. Then they take on the Jets next week. You have the 2-6 Jacksonville Jaguars and Tennessee Titans. Are they really a threat? So can Hasselbeck, kind of keep them on course to win what is, as we described last week, a pretty poor division?
Yeah, and I think that's the key here, Dennis, is that the division's so bad, much like the one the Giants play in, that they still have a shot there. That, and again, you have a guy in Hasselbeck that's been out there before. He's not a liability to the point of some of these other guys are. I don't know if they can really. I don't think they'll play at any level close to what they can play at with Andrew Luck, but I don't think it hurts them that badly in that division. Now, you know, it depends on, again, matchups and who else they have to play, which is going to be important to look at and see where the where their schedule goes. But I think they get to stay in there. They brought back our favorite, one of our favorites from a long time ago. They brought back Ahmad Bradshaw, and pretty interesting how this team can hang around. And again, in that division, they probably have a pretty good chance of doing it.
Yeah, let's take a look, Joe. Maybe we can break it down a little bit. I know sometimes it's hard to look too far ahead, so maybe we'll look at the next four games and assume that Hasselbeck's going to play them. They're on a bye week this week, so that actually kind of works out in their favor, obviously. You don't want anyone to get hurt, but you know, if a guy's going to get hurt in the game before the bye week, that certainly isn't the worst time to have an injury, which you can come back from. Their Week 11 matchup, they're at Atlanta. Obviously, Atlanta is offensively is not really playing as well as they have been. They went out to San Francisco, and San Francisco's in disarray. We talked about it last week. They benched Kaepernick, and Atlanta goes out there, and they can't put up points. And they had trouble putting up points against Tennessee in a game they won. So I know Atlanta plays better at home, but what do you think about that game there? We'll get into the other three. We'll just kind of break them down real quick. What do you think about that game right there? You think Hasselbeck could get enough points on the board and maybe a little bit of a shootout, even though Atlanta's been struggling offensively?
Yeah, I think because Atlanta's been struggling, I think it turns into a little bit better game. And again, they have a good running attack, Indianapolis does. So I think that they'll hang out there. I think Atlanta's starting to come back down to what we thought they were going to be in the beginning of the season, which was nothing all too special. I think both of us thought they were going to be okay, but they certainly started out a lot better than most people thought. I don't think that they can sustain that. But this week they may figure out they got to get back to what they did earlier in the year, which was run the ball better and not leave everything in Matt Ryan's hands. So I think it's a good game. I think Indianapolis actually can hang around here and look okay. And again, I don't distrust, you know, to me putting Hasselbeck in isn't like putting in kid in Cleveland. You know, this isn't like putting in somebody who's got no idea how to play quarterback. This isn't Geno Smith. This isn't Manziel. This isn't a couple of those other guys. You know, this guy's been around and he's done it before. So I think that they're okay. I think they're in a good spot.
All right, just quickly, we'll go through the next three games. We won't go into individually. I figured the first one coming out of the gate there was a good one to look at. They play home against Tampa Bay, a team you looked at this week. You just discussed a little bit, up and coming, better than they were. Jameis Winston looks like he's developing. But, you know, again, is that a winnable game with Hasselbeck? Sure. Then they go for a big game at Pittsburgh. And, you know, Pittsburgh, again, we're going to get into Roethlisberger in a minute. He could be back by then, probably would be. That's a big game, tough to play at Heinz Field, and then they're home against Jacksonville. I mean, could you look at 2-2 right there in those four games? I think I could see 2-2 very easily, and I think 2-2 would put them in position, given this division, to have at least a two-game lead, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's a winnable game, and I don't see them struggling that much in that regard. So I do. I agree. I agree with you 100% there.
All right, well, let's move on then, since I think we're all kind of in the same agreement, under the same agreement here, Joe and I, and I think most people would agree with us as well, that the Colts are still the cream of the crop in that division, a future division. The other teams, again, some younger teams, some developing teams. I think Jacksonville and Tennessee. Jacksonville I saw up close this weekend against Jets. I mean, put up a lot of yardage against a good defense, a lot of yardage, but they made mistakes. And that's where the inexperience comes in. There were -4 in turnovers. I mean, muffing punts. Blake Bortles went to throw the ball and it slipped out of his hands. I mean, just kind of silly mistakes that maybe with more experience they won't make. And maybe someday soon, maybe next year, they'll be a factor. But right now, I don't think so. But let's move on to another injury. And another team that's in the playoff race. And that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And look, let's face it, Joe. Thus far, you and I, our analysis of the Cincinnati Bengals, I mean, they've been fantastic. Andy Dalton's been fantastic. They're 8-0. They're certainly looking like they're going to go 9-0 again. Nothing's given in the NFL. But You know, the Steelers finally get Ben Roethlisberger back and play a very, very competitive game against a team, another team on the rise, the Oakland Raiders. And that has big playoff implications if both of these teams are going to end up in a wild card position, which it looks like they are. But he ends up hurting his foot. Now, the reports that he's going to miss one to 2 weeks. And they got a game coming up against the Cleveland Browns, the pathetic Cleveland Browns. So maybe Landry Jones can kind of hold down the fort there, or Michael Vick, or whoever they decide to use, and get him a win there against Cleveland. And then they got a bye week, and then maybe Roethlisberger can come back. I still think Pittsburgh is dangerous to seal one of those wild card spots. And, you know, I just want to kind of get your input on his injury. And, you know, he's a tough guy, but do you think that 1 to 2 week time frame that they can weather the storm as they've done without him earlier?
Yeah, you know, and now I heard this morning they said he might even play this week. Which would be amazing. So, you know, again, Pittsburgh has that amazing ability to kind of hang in there, but their defense has really struggled lately. They haven't looked good. They're not the Steelers of old. You know, and if he's out for any length of time, I think they're in trouble, because all those guys kind of, again, everybody goes to their level, right? You may play well for a little while, but Landry Jones isn't the answer over an 8-game spread, and neither is obviously Michael Vick. So I think the longer it goes, the harder it is to cover those guys up. So if he's only out for a week and you're playing Cleveland, and with musical quarterbacks in Cleveland going on, I can see them winning this, but I think if he's out for more than a week or two, excuse me, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. And again, with that division, obviously Cincinnati's flying up there, and that's, you know, that's going to preclude them from getting too close to the head of the division there. And, you know, but again, they're going up against wild card teams like the Raiders, who are 4-4, the Texans, who are 3-5, and the Jets, who are 5-3, the Bills, who are 4-4. So they still have a chance in there, but he can't be out too long. If he's out more than a week or two, I think that those other guys show why they're backup quarterbacks, and they won't be able to hide it too much longer.
Yeah, you know, he's got to get back. Like I said, they got this game is Cleveland, which he's saying he might play in. If you're Mike Tomlin, maybe you just say, look, I think we can get by Cleveland. We have a bye week. That gives 2 weeks. Let this guy get healthy. Because then they go in week 12, they go to Seattle. And then, like we discussed, Indianapolis goes to them. Then they got to go to Cincinnati. Then Denver comes in. I mean, the last two games, Baltimore and Cleveland, okay. But they got a little tough stretch there after their bye of some pretty decent teams coming in there, playoff teams, or teams that are in the hunt for the playoffs. So they don't have the easiest schedule after this game moving forward. So I think having Ben back 100%, throw him into this game that you think you can win with your backup, and then he gets hurt, and then he's out for longer. Or, hey, let's just hope we can get this victory under our belt against a bad Cleveland Browns team. Let him get back to being close to 100% and, you know, have him as healthy as possible for this tough stretch after the bye.
Yeah, I think if he's anything less than 100% this week, you're right, Dennis. Why bother? Because you're not dead if you wind up at 5-5 either, if you somehow lost to Cleveland. So I think you're better off having him back healthy. It was a freak accident. You know, it had nothing to do with him coming back too soon from the other injury he had. But I think you got to be, to me, you err on the side of caution here, and you keep him out. And hopefully you can beat this team just by pressuring the bad quarterback and take it from there.
Hey, you know, another thing about the Cleveland Browns is they don't defend. I know that they lost Le'Veon Bell to the Steelers, but they don't defend the run very well at all. Mm-hmm. So you can see D'Angelo Williams, even a little bit older back, but, you know, you can see him having a pretty big game there, them being able to implement the run, control the clock, not just limit the reps for Jones, and, you know, come out of there. Home game, all that stuff. I agree with you. I think that they should err on the side of caution, and that's probably what they'll do. But again, only time will tell. You know, Ben, he wants to be in there, but maybe the smart thing is to kind of let him rest up and be ready for the stretch run here. Wanted to get in this with you, Joe, because and also tap into your expertise a little bit as a referee. Joe is a referee on a high school and a semi-pro level. He's my rules expert. And it's about Teddy Bridgewater. Now, Teddy Bridgewater, he's a little bit of a scrambler. He actually rushed for a touchdown in this game and then was rushing, slid, got hit by the St. Louis Rams cornerback LaMarcus Joyner and got knocked out. I mean, he was knocked out cold. He's in concussion protocol now. Who knows if he's going to play. Now, next week, the Vikings actually play the Raiders, at the Raiders. That's it. That's got maybe a little bit bigger for the Raiders since they're 4-4. But, you know, the Vikings are now right there with the Green Bay in the division. But want to kind of go over first, before we get into the Greg Williams stuff and his history, just want to go over that hit with you. Do you think that Joyner is going to be fined? How did you look at it from a rules perspective, from a referee's perspective? What would you have done in that situation?
Well, the fact that he turned himself into a runner, so you have to forget the fact that he's a quarterback at that moment. As soon as he puts the ball away and starts running out of the pocket, he's no longer considered quarterback. So that's why it wasn't called roughing the passer when they do it. And of course, you have to throw the ball to get roughing the passer. So that had that part of it was out of it. But any runner at any time can give themselves up. And basically, when you start your slide is when the play is over. And players know this. So that guy who came in, if you watch, again, it's tougher in real time than it is in replay time. If you watch the replay again, as the defensive back is going down, even though Bridgewater's already on the ground, he does lead with his elbow and kind of throw it towards, you know, as if he's going to try to make contact above the shoulder, and that's what he did, and that's the part that's illegal. So that's why he's probably, I don't know if he'll get suspended. I know he'll get fined. Dean Blandino, the head of officiating, came out and said, definitely there was a problem. And what they do is they look at it. They say, yes, that was an illegal move. So they sent it over to Merton Hanks, who's in charge of NFL discipline. And they look at it, and then they determine if they're going to fine him or suspend him or whatever. So, you know, I'm not saying he did anything, you know, on purpose, or they're trying out, or they're, you know, this whole bounty thing again rears its head. But that was a dirty play only because he was down for such a period of time. And once he starts going down and he wasn't trying to get extra yardage, there's no way he's going to do it. You can hit him anywhere else you wanted to. But once you go above the shoulders, that's what everybody's trying to keep out of the game these days. And again, wasn't so easy to see live, except when you saw Bridgewater lying there. It didn't look like he hit him. It didn't look like he hit him at all until you saw him lying there. And then when you saw the replay, you saw him lead with his elbow, which is the part that they'll get him for. But again, tough call on the field at that moment. You know, I had this discussion with a gentleman I know quite well the other day, and he asked me about the college rule as far as targeting and those things, Dennis. And you know, the college game's kind of been ruined a little bit by replay because they feel like they have to replay almost every play so that the guy up in the booth has something to do. But it seems like their version of it's a little bit better, that when you see a hit like that, even though it wasn't called or if it was called, they go back and look at it right there and they throw the guy out of the game if it was targeting, you know, but at least they get to look at it. So if I throw my flag and I say he did it on purpose, you know, he targeted him, he launched at him, he used his elbow, he hit him in the head. If I made a mistake, we can correct it because they go back and look at it. But if I didn't, then they throw the guy out of the game. So that might be coming down the pike. It's funny because officiating actually works the opposite of the way things work, Dennis. It doesn't go from the NFL to college to high school. You know, it actually goes the other way around. They try things out at the lower levels, then they try it in college for a while, and then it goes to the end if they get the bugs worked out. So where you would think the top league would be the innovator and moving things along, it's actually from the lower level, you know, adding extra officials and doing different things with replays that they try out there first, and then they bring them along to the NFL level.
Now, let me ask you a little bit about this. So would you have seen that play in real time when you saw it? Would you have thrown the flag and given would you have said that, you know, that was a roughing call? Would you have given the 15-yard penalty? Under the agreement that he will get fined.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll get, especially since Blandino came out and said we saw that it was a violation. Again, I don't know what the outcome's going to be, because if they decide they're going to suspend him for a game, like they did Akeem Talib, you know how things go. You know, then it goes to an appeals, then it goes to arbitration, then it goes to all kinds of garbage. So I can never say what the outcome's ever going to be. But I believe he'll get a letter. He'll get when he comes in the old when he comes in Thursday morning, there'll be a FedEx envelope on his stool in front of his locker. Although they're not stools anymore, they're, as you know, they're quite comfortable chairs in front of their lockers. And there'll be an envelope there that says you've been fined whatever, $10,000, $15,000.
And you know, it was interesting, Mike Zimmer, the coach, head coach of the Vikings, said if we were out in the street, we probably would have a fight. And he was referring to Greg Williams. And Greg Williams is the defensive coordinator of the Rams. And, you know, most people will remember that he was, you know, suspended by the league for the bounty gate and kind of the mastermind of that and the whole the audio tapes and things like that. So, you know, Mike Zimmer was referring to his history. He just said, you know, something to the effect of the guy's got a history, basically. You take if you take. Here's what I said. You guys got a history. Go ahead. You run with it. Take it. You interpret that any way you like.
Well, you know, there's two guys in this league I think should never get jobs again, and and I think it's Rob Ryan and it's Greg Williams. And you know, I just think that they were given another chance, but you can see they're kind of some of these guys are on a short leash. With Rob Ryan, you can see Peyton's all over him as far as the calls he makes. He checks everything he does. I think they're going to get tired of each other. And you know, Sean doesn't mind. Sean Payton in New Orleans certainly doesn't mind being in charge of everything. He probably feels a little bit more comfortable that way. But you can see him on top of Rob and making sure that he doesn't call some stupid calls. And he knows it's a work. You know, it's not a very good defense down there. The same thing with Greg Williams. You know, they gave him a job. They hopefully he had learned his lesson. But again, you don't know in coaching rooms, he's probably still saying the same things. I don't think he's offering money. I don't know if he ever was, but don't really change their stripes that much where he's going to say, hey, make sure we don't touch anybody if they're down. I think he's still there to make sure you inflict as much pain as possible. That's got to be his MO. That's just the way he coaches. That's the way he thinks. And again, times have changed. You know, you can't have that. We've noticed it at the semi-pro level. We noticed it at the junior college level, noticed it at high school level and at the little kid level that the thinking has to change. And most of the time it has. I had a playoff game last week where it started to get chippy. Kids started talking to each other. I took both coaches and told them to take their teams aside and tell them to cut it out. And we're not going to do it. We had a team the other night that refused to shake hands at the coin toss. And we looked at him and he said, are you sure this is what you want to do? And we called the coach over and he said, did you instruct them not to shake hands? And he said, no. And we said, are you all right with that? He said, it's their decision. And we said, good. It's our decision to give them 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct at the coin toss. And wasn't happy about it, but guess what? This game has to change. This game has to be about sportsmanship, and hopefully we get some of these guys out of the game and it starts to resemble what it used to be. And, you know, as far as good-natured sportsmanship play and play between the whistles, but other than that, you're not out there to hurt anybody.
Yeah, it was interesting, though. Adrian Peterson did say on NBC Sports Radio that he did not believe that it was an intentional or a dirty hit. Again, maybe that's Adrian Peterson being a little PC or trying to play peacemaker. Who knows? But, again, the history is out there. So you can understand why Mike Zimmer was upset. I certainly wouldn't blame him. Obviously, Minnesota, we discussed this. That was a big game for both of those teams. Minnesota is now tied for first place. They're going into Oakland. That's going to be a tough game for them. You know, they're going to be on the road. And the Raiders played a great game against a good Steelers team in their place. You know, the Raiders definitely have a chance to make the playoffs here. And, again, this is a big game for them going – both teams. I mean, the Vikings are in a great position to make a wild card, at least if they want to contend for the division. I know that Green Bay is at home against Detroit, who is a complete mess, and goes to show you that you know, one good year, you know, may lead to another bad year if you really not manage well. But you know, hopefully Bridgewater can play. There's some pretty good news coming out about him thus far. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. But you brought up a name, and you brought up some things about, you know, Rob Ryan, and I kind of agree with you. He's done a poor job as a defensive coordinator, and maybe he's living off his name. But, you know, we're going to do something that's up my alley now. We're going to talk a little about this week and the Thursday night game, the big matchup, Bills and Jets. Now, I mentioned this, I was at the Jacksonville Jaguars game. I covered it. It's in the locker room afterwards, and usually guys are very jovial after a win, no matter what. But I kind of felt that they were a little bit melancholy, because the Jacksonville game was not a crisp game for the Jets. They got a few breaks there, and look, a win's a win. But I didn't feel like they were as much confidence as I had felt in the past when I was around the team, especially after a victory. And you know what? The Bills went against the Dolphins. They put a nice whooping on them, and they ran the ball pretty well. Carlos Williams, LeSean McCoy, Sammy Watkins had a nice game, you know, kind of thing. He's kind of back. He'll be up against Revis. But here's the thing, and I know you're not the biggest fan of Rex Ryan. I like Rex Ryan when he was here. He had personality, and, you know, it didn't end well, and that's what happens with coaches that get fired. But I think Rex Ryan right now, and people are saying this is kind of classless, and you know what? I don't disagree with that at all, making I.K. Anunoby the captain, the guy who punched Geno Smith in the mouth, broke his jaw, cost him a chance to start. Ryan Fitzpatrick has stepped in, and even with a hurt thumb, there's no real reason for them not to continue to use Ryan Fitzpatrick given where they are. And while I do think it's a little bit of a classless move, I understand Rex Ryan's mindset here. And I'm going to tell you right now, Joe, what Rex Ryan's trying to do, and he is being successful, because it was all discussed in the locker room after the Jacksonville game. Rex Ryan kept coming up. I didn't ask very many questions about Rex Ryan. My questions were, this is going to be about Rex Ryan, at least that's what's going to be asked. But this game is about playoff positioning. That's what I felt. Forget about Rex Ryan. Because the next week you go to play the Houston Texans. You can't wait to beat Bill O'Brien, or you can't wait to win a game so you can get in the playoffs. But obviously this kept coming up. But here's my thing. Rex Ryan has now taken the focus away from the Jets' attention to detail of the game and put it on this issue. That's all they're being asked about. That's all they're talking about. And Calvin Pryor, the strong safety, the second-year strong safety, he tweets out, this guy does anything for attention. Now, Calvin Pryor isn't even playing in the game on Thursday. And my point is this, is that maybe this was what Rex Ryan wanted. He wanted the Jets to lose focus on sight of the bigger prize, which is beating the Buffalo Bills. And now they're dealing with all these questions regarding this. That's my opinion. Go ahead, Joe. I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, you know what? I don't disagree with you at all, Dennis. And again, I know you always start those conversations off with the fact that I don't like Rex Ryan. I like Rex Ryan and the coach. I don't like this Rex Ryan when he does stuff like this, when he says things about other coaches, like he said about Norv Turner in San Diego, where he could have won Super Bowls without, you know, if he had had that team. And those are things that, to me, are unnecessary. You know, every coach, and he gets a bad rap for some things because he opens his mouth. One of the things he said in New York at one time was, you know, they had planned out when the Super Bowl parade would be, when they won the year that, you know, he had the best team he's ever had. And you're like, you know, every coach has the entire schedule, because these guys are like that. They have every minute figured out. Every coach knows what day the Super Bowl is on and what would happen afterwards and how, you know, but they don't announce it. They don't go to the paper and say, oh, yeah, today we figured out when the parade would be. That's Rex being Rex, and that's the part that I think is unnecessary. I think he's a good football coach. I think he's a much better defensive coordinator than he is a head coach. I think he's Wade Phillips. Let's put it that way. I think he's much better as a defense coordinator than he is as a head coach. And if he would stay that way and just, you know, get recognition that way, I think he'd be better off. But, again, we'll go back to the day that this happened. I think you guys should make Ike Anunoby a captain. Because if you're playing with Geno Smith right now, you would have them down for 3 or 4 wins for the year. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick's done a fantastic job. I think he's going to continue to do for test. The guy played hurt last week. He looked good. You know, he's doing whatever he can. I think you're much better off at this point. So, I don't, you know, this whole thing is just nonsense. And like you said, if the Jets take the bait and they get all up in worrying about that and get worried about the coin flip and worry about the guy coming out, who cares? It shouldn't have anything to do with anything. They should laugh at them. You know, I could look. I'm sure, Dennis, you probably know quicker than I do. Has this guy even played for Buffalo this year? Does he have any stats?
Yeah, he's played some, but he's a reserve player.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going to worry about a guy that, you know, the guy that's got 15 tackles or something on the team? I mean, it can't be any, you know, they should. And again, we don't know, and maybe this is how we start to see what Todd Bowles is made out of. You know, is he able to, in the locker room, get them to be different than what we think the Jets are doing right now? We know the Jets under Rex Ryan would be thinking about this, would be talking about it, would be going back and forth with the other team if this happened to them. Is Todd Bowles sitting there saying, talk about it, I don't want you answering any questions, you know, taking care of it in some way of his own, that they're just going to go out there and show this team that we're better off? Now, they lost to this team horribly last year in two games. And Sammy Watkins is back. And so now the question becomes, this is actually a tougher game for Rex. There's a lot more pressure on this game under Rex to say, so this team beat up on the Jets last year twice when you were coaching the Jets. If the Jets come out and beat up on Buffalo, isn't the common denominator Rex Ryan? And you say, you know, maybe we made a mistake with the coach we picked at this point. So I think the pressure is really on him. Like you said, he's trying to deflect it so that people have something else to talk about. But hopefully the Jets, you know, and again, I think it's a little bit of a referendum on Todd Bowles. Are they really that distracted that he can't keep them focused on the task at hand in a division game on short rest?
Well, it's not only – I mean, it's a huge game for a lot of reasons. It's a division game. It's a conference game. The Bills are 4-4. The Jets are 5-3. Well, if the Bills win, guess what? This is the accordion effect that I like to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, a Jet victory, they're now putting themselves in great position to be that fifth seed wild card. Again, they're not winning the division with the Patriots in it, okay? But they lose this game, and they're just another number. And again, we're gonna come on next week, and we're gonna be talking about the playoff picture. And we're gonna say if they lose that game, we're gonna say, well, Buffalo's right in the thick of it. They had to play Buffalo twice, the last game of the year. I mean, you were discussing this a little earlier, Joe, with maybe off the air about the Giants play the Eagles at the end of the year, and that could be in essence a playoff game. The winner of that game could end up winning the division and going into the playoffs, and the loser goes home. Well, that might be the same thing here with the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets. And this game goes a long way to making that game more relevant. If the Bills win this game, and plus Oakland, you know, again, Oakland could beat Minnesota. They could lose. The Steelers, there's so much. I even think the Kansas City Chiefs have a shot against the Denver Broncos to get to 4-5. And if they do somehow or another get to 4-5, then, you know, this is the accordion effect. Is the accordion coming together or is it coming apart? And this is a big game. And this is why I kept saying this kind of the question I was asking. Again, I was surrounded by a lot of other media members who wanted to talk about a lot of other things. Because, again, you know, print media, the bloggers that are for the big media outlets, they got to get the headlines and things like that. I don't, because, you know, I'm small time. So it's a lot easier for me to kind of be more focused on some game stuff. But the question I asked was always about was not about Rex. Was about beating a conference opponent, a division opponent, and an opponent who is chasing you for a playoff spot. That was the question that I asked, and that's what this game is about. Like last week, John Idzik was sitting one section over from me. I actually got to speak to him, the former Jets general manager. I talked to him a little bit, said hello, said I was a season ticket holder. You know, I'm glad to see you, Atlanta. I don't have hate hatred of John Idzik. Look, the guy came in, he implemented a plan. He only had 2 years. He had a different approach. Was the game against Jacksonville about beating Gus Bradley or beating John Idzik? I mean, John Idzik used to be the boss there. But no, it wasn't. It was about beating a conference team, a team that was 2-5 at home, coming off a two-game losing streak so that you could get a win under your belt and go into a turnaround in a short week and go face a division opponent. And that's what this game should be all about. But Rex, and maybe kudos to him. Maybe he's a mad genius. I don't know. But he has turned the story to turn the clock back to something that happened in the locker room that I still think is an issue, because where were the veterans? This would not have happened to Ryan Nassib. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to mention Eli Manning. Would this have happened to Ryan Nassib?
No, and And you're right, you know, Dennis, we're in the same boat this week with, you know, Belichick coming in. Everybody talks about, oh, this in the past and the undefeated season. And the, and both Coughlin and Belichick said, look, those are different years. Those are different teams. So nothing to do with this. He's great. I'm great. And we're going to go out there and we're going to play. And the players are the stars of the teams. You know, they don't try to do anything to distract from what it's supposed to be all about, which is the game. And I know this is a little bit different because of the way it happened, but still, it's not something that needs to be discussed. Like I said, it's a marginal player. This isn't like Tom Brady doing something. This isn't like, you know, Nick Mangold. I mean, why aren't we talking about Nick Mangold being hurt or any stuff again? It gets everybody off of the topic of what it should be, which is football. And Rex has always been able to make this into more of a reality show than it is a football game, and he's the master at it. Now, I'd hope you guys wouldn't take the bait, but like you said, if that was the conversation, then he's already, and I saw the back of the New York Post yesterday, you know, it's all over the place, and that's what they want. That's what they want to talk about. So if they can't deflect that and get back to football, then there's still an issue in that building. And you and I had gone over this from before. You're absolutely correct. Just this doesn't happen in the other New York locker room for that reason, because there are other guys there to handle it.
Yeah, you know, the thing is this also is with the Jets is that, look, they came off that two-game losing streak, and they gave up over 450 yards of offense, 381 passing yards they gave up to the Jacksonville Jaguars, okay? Well, I mean, not exactly murderers as well. They have some decent young talent on offense, but if they didn't get the six sacks because they have a terrible offensive line, which I mentioned, Jacksonville gave up 71 sacks last year. The offensive line is terrible, okay? So if they didn't give – they wouldn't have won that game. Again, dropping punts, plus four in turnovers. I'll give the Jets credit for not turning the ball over, but this game, if they had lost this game – and again, this is why the feeling in the locker room was kind of like, oh, yeah, we won, but we didn't play so hot. We didn't play our A game. That doesn't mean they can't come out and play their A game against the Bills. But if they go out there and they give up 450 yards of offense against this Bills team, they're losing. Okay? They give up, and this is a trend, because in this three-game losing streak, I mean, it's been not being able to run the ball. Chris Ivory's run for about a one average when he was running for a five average. It's been, you know, their secondary got torched by Tom Brady. Okay, it's Tom Brady. They got torched by Derek Carr. They got beat up by Latavius Murray, the running back. And then, you know, they gave up all this yardage to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, Jacksonville doesn't have a great defense. That they give up an average of 30 points per game. That's, I think, 31st in the league or something like that. So, again, the Jets really had to come in here and have tunnel vision and be focused on this game, because if they want to make the play, again, this is going to go a long way. If they lose this game, it is going to be way up in the air. If they win it, they're really on track to get that number five seed. So, Joe, I'm going to ask you for – I'm not going to make a prediction because I have green and white glasses, but I'm going to ask you for a prediction. What do you think the outcome of this game is going to be? I'll tell you one thing. The Buffalo Bills give up a decent number of sacks. That is one thing about their offense. They give up a decent number of sacks, although they have been out with Tyrod Taylor for a couple of games. But go ahead.
Not to steal the thoughts of another famous radio personality, but is Nick playing? Is Nick healthy? What's going on in the middle of your offensive line?
He's probable. It looks like he's probable. But, again, he played less, and then he had to come out. So, you know, it is what it is. Like I had mentioned this in one of my other podcasts I do, is that when you're injured, you're injured. When you're hurt, you're hurt. And Nick's a warrior, and he's missed very few games. But, you know, he had to come out of that game on Sunday, and why do I feel confident that he's going to be able to finish a game on Thursday? I think he's starting and think he'll be in there, but he may not finish it. So, you know, that's a little – and would I be shocked if he ended up being a game-time decision and not playing? No. If I had to stand there right now, say at least he starts. At least
I think that's the key, is can he stay in? Can he be effective? Because that's one of the strengths of Buffalo, is their defensive line. So if they can kind of break up the rhythm there, or if they can, again, get in the backfield and stop the run and put more pressure on Fitzpatrick to make some plays, you know, there's two things that you guys do, you know, and I know that you think as a Jet fan that you've figured out the back end, but, you know, Sir Cromartie get beat last week pretty badly, and you know, Sammy Watkins is good, and it gives them that other weapon that they need. And I just think that, you know, on both sides of the ball, there's a weakness there, and that they can exploit just because of the type of team that they are. But I think it comes down to whether or not Nick can play and whether or not he's effective. So let's just put it that way. Excuse me. Because that's going to be that could tell the whole story right there of how much pressure they can get. And again, they have a very, very good defensive line, as you do. But if you're best offensive player, and I've watched some Jet games this year, not for any other reason than we do this show. I do sort of like to watch them play sometimes. I know that Nick calls most of the signals. As Eli walks up to the line of scrimmage for the Giants and makes all the calls, makes all the protection calls, it seems that that's Nick doing that. That Geno Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick say absolutely nothing, especially when Geno's in there. They walk up to the line and wait for him to tell them it's okay to go ahead and snap the ball. He makes all those calls. So, again, you lose that. I think that's a big, big loss on your side of the ball. So I would take Buffalo in this instance.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Williams, Marcell Dareus. I mean, I am very, very concerned about this game. And, you know, again, the Jets, the problem, like you're saying, is the Jets spent a lot of money, and we'll wrap this up, we'll go on to some other games. The Jets spent a lot of money on their secondary. And Revis is Revis. But other than that, you know, Buster Screen is not – he's been good on the blitz, but coverage, eh. You know, Cromartie, he's a little banged up. Marcus Williams has done a nice job kind of stepping in, a younger guy. We'll see if he – but their safeties, they're down prior. They're down a couple of the safeties they've lost. So, you know, that might be a little bit of a weakness there. Their linebackers are not great in coverage, and they don't really have an elite pass rusher. That's the thing. Even though Buffalo gives us some sacks, they don't really have an elite guy that you got to look at and say, or even a guy who's very good. There's not one guy you key on for a pass rush with the Jets. This is going to be a war. This is going to be a war. That's why it's up my alley. I cover the team. I do different, you know, that's why we brought. But this is a big game in the AFC playoff picture right here. This is a huge one. It's Thursday night, national television, the whole spiel. We'll see what the outcome is. I'm not going to make a prediction. You know, I'm rooting for, but it's going to be a close game. I just can't see it going one way or the other, being a blowout. With that, Joe, why don't we move on to another good game of the week here that we want to look at, and that would be the Sunday night game, another primetime game. Two teams coming off a bye, two teams in the division, and that's the Arizona Cardinals at the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, look, the Seahawks are at 4-4, and the Cardinals sit at the top of the division at 6-2. Again, it's the accordion effect. It's the accordion effect. Here we go. Right. You either squeeze that accordion together, 5-4, 6-3, or 7-2 and 4-5. And you know, Seattle is the reigning former back-to-back Super Bowl appearees and one-time Super Bowl champion. Looking on the outside, looking in, if they lose this game, it's at home. I mean, they're both coming off a bye week, so that's not an advantage for either team. But home game against the team that they're looking up at. I mean, you want to just I don't even know how to describe this game. War might be might not even be a strong enough word to describe what this game is going to be like.
Yeah, these are two teams that I have absolutely no idea who they really are. I think that's the best way to say it, Dennis. I have no idea if Arizona is as good as they've been advertised and as good as they played at times. I don't know if Seattle's as bad as they've played at times. And, you know, they seem to be kind of getting, every now and then they seem to be kind of getting it back together again and playing better. But again, they've lost players on the back end. And what's always funny is thinking about this the other day, the guys that they've lost have done absolutely nothing in their new spots. You know, Walter Thurman isn't all that great, and a couple of the other guys that you look at as you go along. Yeah, Maxwell. When you see them out there by themselves without the whole group, they're not exactly earth-shattering players. They're not top primetime players. And so I think it's interesting that, you know, how this happens. They've lost some key guys who turned out to be not the answer for the teams that they've gone to. And you wonder if they wish they still had him or if they could have kept him in some way. But, you know, I still think Seattle's offense isn't all that good.
Yeah.
And just not strong enough. You know, I'm just looking at some stats of the two teams. You know, Arizona's scoring almost 33 points a game where Seattle scores 20. You know, offensive yards 417 to 350. Points allowed are 19 to 17.5, so that's about the same. So that Seattle defense is no longer, you know, heads and shoulders above everybody else. They're 2.5 better than Arizona. Nothing to hang your hat on. Yards allowed 312 to 285. Again, 15 yards a game is no big deal. And they're also not scoring. I don't have that stat, but they're also not scoring touchdowns like they used to, and have all the takeaways. So I think that that's a key in this game, that I think that the offenses are unequal. I think Arizona is a much, much better offense, and I don't think Seattle's defense is as strong. But again, we've seen Arizona just play poorly at times and not be able to get over the hump. And I just, you can never tell with these two teams. I don't trust either one of them at this point. And I really don't know who they are at this moment, the way that they're playing. But Seattle needs a game for sure. If Arizona wins this game, you know, they have 7 wins with only 2 losses. The Rams will have 4 or 5 losses. The Seahawks will have 5 losses. The Niners are done. You know, they can kind of take over the division. So it would be good for them to go on a Sunday night and show everybody that they're for real and win the West. So I think it's a good game. I think Arizona should be too tough for them if they play the way they're capable of playing.
Well, one thing I'll bring it up, because I pulled up the stat for you, is Arizona is fifth in the league, a plus 33 in the takeaway, giveaway, turning into points, and the Seahawks are only plus 9. So, you know, the Jets, surprisingly enough, are plus 36. That's one of the reasons why they won that game against Jacksonville. But teams that's great. You know, look, you getting, creating turnovers and turning them into points is great. Sometimes when you look at that, and that statistic isn't working for you, it's close, it's tight in the turnover category. Maybe there aren't any turnovers, or maybe you're minus 1 or minus. You know, Arizona has, you say they scored a lot of points, and they have. They've blown some teams away. They have blown some teams away. I'm not taking anything away from them. They're a very good team. They're solid on defense, solid on offense. You know, Carson Palmer being there makes all the difference in the world. You know, Ryan Lindley destroyed them last year. They win 11 games to go on the road against Carolina, and they get 77 yards of offense in the playoff game. I mean, that's not exactly a recipe for success. You're right. I have to lean a little bit towards the Seahawks here, and here's why. They're home. They play much better at home. I know they lost to Carolina. Think they had a little time off to kind of get things squared away. And I'm sorry, I just don't see the Cardinals as, you know, a 13-win team. That's what they would be if they won this game, like a 13-win team. I just don't see it. I think this division is too competitive. I'm thinking maybe 11 games wins it. And I think Seattle's a little bit more with their back against the wall. And I just got a feeling here that they're going to take this one. Again, you're right. You can't predict who's going to show up, what. There's a lot of factors that are going to go into this game. Turnovers, penalties, mistakes, who plays crisper ball. I just got a strange feeling that Seattle's going to come out on top. You seem to be leaning a little bit more towards the Cardinals. Am I correct, Joe?
Just because I think that they're a stronger offensive team, and so it gives them more opportunity to win the game. I think they have more weapons to defend. You know, again, you and I are – neither one of us are big fans of Russell Wilson. Neither one of us are big fans of Doug Baldwin. I just don't think that, you know, is that big a threat compared to what Arizona can put out there. So, and I know, you know, I'm also not the biggest of Pete Carroll fans. I think you've figured that out over the years too, days here in Southern California. But I don't know. Right now I would lean more towards Arizona. I think they just have more weapons.
You know, funny thing, just to finish up on this, is one, I'm getting back to the Jets a little bit. Chris Johnson is having a really nice year for the Cardinals. They picked him up, and the Jets had him under contract, and they let him go. And right now, with Chris Ivory struggling, and Shane Vereen, not Shane Vereen, excuse me, a different New England running back, Stephen Ridley. Stephen Ridley has come off PUP and been active for 2 games, but hasn't touched the ball once. So far through 9 weeks of football, Stephen Ridley has zero attempts, zero. He's basically had zeros across the board. So, you know, you wonder if the Jets kind of maybe was, I know some things were going on him off the field, some gun possession things that were dropped, and he did get shot, and you wonder maybe, oh, they made the right decision. But looking at statistically right now what he's doing with Arizona, it might be nice to have that compliment to Chris Ivory, given the fact that Chris Ivory was, you know, just barreling people over, and now it seems like he's a little bit dinged up and just not the same guy that I saw earlier in the year. A lot of factors go into that, but would have been nice to have a compliment to him, and right now they really don't, and really hasn't looked like the answer just yet, maybe still not 100% over that knee injury. Johnson could be a factor in this game. He's got that. He looks like he looked maybe a few years ago when he was with Tennessee. You're right. They do have a little bit more weapons on offense, the Cardinals. But you know what? Seattle still has that tough defense, and we'll see how that goes. Should be a great game. Nationally televised game Sunday night. Sit down, as your buddy Terrell Owens would say, get your popcorn ready. Should be a wonderful one. Let's get into the last two. I got two here to kind of finish up. And we mentioned this one a little bit before with Teddy Bridgewater, a little up in the air. Vikings at Raiders. I think a little bit bigger of a game for the Raiders. Again, don't want to go to 4-5. Doesn't necessarily put them out of it. But I do want to say this about the Raiders, having watched them now play a little bit against Pittsburgh, having watched them really just demolish the Jets. They may fall short of the playoffs this year. They may. But I think they have a really bright future. And it goes to show you just like how you go about building a team. Reggie McKenzie came in there. A lot of bad contracts. He said, I need some time. I need some time to get this thing squared away. And it was not going to happen overnight. But now you look at them, and if they don't make the playoffs, but they could be competitive for a long time.
Yeah, and I think the thing that he did also was he didn't bring in Del Rio until he had gotten rid of the bad contracts and brought in the guys he wanted to bring in. So he didn't put him in a bad situation. He didn't put him where he was going to lose 10, 12 games for 2 years. He didn't stick that on him where people are going, oh, this guy's not the answer either, and he's supposed to be the savior. He let him. They went through the other guys first, got rid of the contracts, got David Carr, did the whole thing. Derek Carr went through the whole transformation and then brought him in to take the real good guys and let him coach those guys and bring them ahead. I agree with you, Dennis. I like this team. I think they're on the rise. I think they need a couple of more players, obviously. And this is a big, big game for them. They kind of need to win this game. And Minnesota, obviously they want to stay in touch with Green Bay, which, who knows how long Green Bay is going to stay in this little funk they're in. So I think it'd be a very, very, very good game. But I agree with you. I think Oakland's on the rise. I think those people up there should be very happy. Even though they're going to be playing in LA in a year and a half, I think that they're on the right track. I agree with you 100%.
And this game is in Oakland, and I remember the Vikings went out to San Francisco earlier in the year and they got beat. So the Raiders defense looked a little bit better the last few weeks. They were kind of struggling early. The Vikings do have a good defense, someone Linville Joseph was named, I think he was named NFC Player of the Week for the Vikings. They do have a nice defense, but, the Jets had a nice defense going in there, and they kind of got picked apart a little bit. Big game for the Raiders. I kind of like the Raiders. I like the Raiders here a little bit just because they're playing at home. And the Vikings, kudos to them for being 6-2. But the two games that they've lost are on the road. They're 2-2 on the road. They're 4-0 at home. So they definitely play better at home. They like the home cooking. Even Bridgewater, if he does play, you wonder if he might be a little gun shy. I like the Raiders in this spot. The Raiders have been playing very well. They've been playing very well at home. They're 2-2 right now. I know they lost that one heartbreaker at Denver where they gave them a real good run for their money. So, they could be 3-1 at home. A lot of teams could say that, but tough place to go play the Black Hole. I saw it firsthand when they went and played the Jets. I kind of like the Raiders here to get up to 5 wins. And again, this AFC, it's very muddled. I mean, the NFC is a little more clear. We discussed that last week with that game in St. Louis. It cleared up a little bit more. We'll still have to see what's going on with the Rams, and there's still a lot more football to be played. But it's a little bit clearer, and you could kind of say, this team is definitely on the track for making the wild card. At least the wild card is a little bit clearer. But in the AFC, this week will go a long way, and it might even become even more muddled by the time this week ends.
Yeah, your Chargers put themselves out of it.
Yes, my sleeper team put me to sleep.
Turned out to be the worst pick in the history of sports. And again, it's funny because they're talking about it. One of the reasons you were high on San Diego this year is because they got over their offensive line woes and They had played with three centers last year, and that was a big point of emphasis. And then they played with four left tackles 2 weeks ago in the same game. And four different guys playing left tackle. So they obviously have an issue on the offensive line, and they haven't been able to get out of their own way. They don't lose by a lot, but they continue
to
lose.
So
that, you know, that's kind of cleared that part up. Like you said, the Chiefs are still alive at 3-5, wild card, 4-4 Raiders, 3-5 Texans, 5-4 Steelers, 4-4 Bills, 5-3 Jets. Do you put in, you know, if you're going to put in 3-5 Houston, you got to put in 3-5 Miami. I think the two win teams are done. Ravens, Browns, Jaguars, Titans, Chargers. I think you got to start to leave them off the lists. But if you don't leave them off the lists, then everybody's alive. That's why you got to leave them off the list.
Yeah, you got to start looking at something realistically and saying they're not going to make it.
But if nobody has more than, you know, wild card team, nobody has more than 5 wins. You know, is two really that far back? So you really have to let everybody be alive in the AFC. Whereas in the NFC, you know, you have the Lions at 1-7, and you have the 49ers, even though they have 3 wins, we know they're not going anywhere. You have the Cowboys that desperately need to win a game. That had to be one of the worst losses for them to lose that game the way that they did. You could see them starting to come back. You could see them starting to hold on. They weren't looking too bad against the Eagles, and then the pick six comes and puts them right back behind the eight ball. And then you say, okay, we tied it up. Fantastic. We're great. I threw a jump ball while I was backpedaling 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and Dez Bryant comes down with it. Not exactly the play of the year. Of course, for Cowboy fans, it was. And then you don't even show up in overtime. They walk down the field and score. So, I don't know. They have to win a game. And I tell you what, being at Tampa, the team I saw with Jameis Winston and the running backs that they have and some of the defense that they can put up against you, that's not going to be an easy game. And I think I texted you the other day. Tampa played the Giants, played Dallas this week, and played the Eagles next week. So this is a college schedule and you're the AD, you'd probably get fired. That's like scheduling Florida State, Alabama, and Georgia back to back to back. Makes no sense how they get to play the NFC East 3 straight weeks. But Dallas has to win. I think they have to. I guess if they lose at Tampa Bay, then they can win at Miami the next week. You still got Carolina. You still got Green Bay, who's going to be fighting for a division. You still have the Jets, and you still have a Buffalo team that's going to be fighting for something. So even though Romo says he's coming back for Miami, it might be too late at 8 losses. I think they have to run the table from here on out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, to get the 8 wins that they need and go from there. Because, otherwise they're going to, I guess you're saying 7 can win this division, but, you know, if they... I don't think so. I think they need to win 7 in a row. And so they have to find a way to win without Tony this week. And then they got to beat Carolina, got to beat the Jets, got to beat Buffalo, got to beat Washington, who will always put them in a... give them a good fight. Be interesting. They really are in a tough spot. It's either going to be the greatest turnaround comeback, and he's going to get player of the year, and they'll give him a 30-year contract because he's the best quarterback they've ever had, or they're going home. So.
Yeah, you know what? Look, I mean, they got 8 games left at 2-6, so they win this game, they go to 3-6, and could you conceivably put them out of the conversation? No, but, I mean, over 8 games, look at the Green Bay Packers. I mean, we still think mm-hmm. they're still an elite team. They have a great chance to go to the big game. They're 6-2. Going 6-2 over 8 games, I mean, I know there's teams out there that went 8-0, 7-0, 9, whatever, right. But going 6-2 in this league is not bad. I'll take 6-2 and 6-2 and 12-4. I'll take that any day of the week. So even if they went 6-2 down the stretch, that may not be enough for them to get in. That may not be enough.
And the division games really come into play, because when you look at other divisions, you know, it's the Giants are 2-2, the Eagles are 2-2, Dallas are 2-2. But when you go to like Minnesota, Minnesota's 3-0 in the division. Green Bay's only 1-0. They haven't played anybody. You know, the Bears are starting to make a little bit of a push, but they're 0-3 in the division. So, you know, that's the great equalizer there. So, again, the Cowboys would have to run the table, which means they would have to beat Washington twice, which, again, is not an easy thing to do. Beating, you know, winning out in your division is difficult. So if they wind up 3-3 in the division, that becomes a very, very difficult spot because they start to lose tiebreakers, they start to lose different things. So I think the real test for them comes, you know, there's a test this week at Tampa Bay, but even if you beat Tampa Bay, Tony comes back, you beat Miami, you get Carolina showing up on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas, wanting to show that they're for real. I told my friend who's a Green Bay Packer fan the other day that Cam Newton should probably get a delay of game penalty for all the different gyrations he goes through when his team or he scores a touchdown. Between the first down dance and then the pointing at his back and then the Superman thing and the little dance, like, how many different celebrations are you going to have for scoring a point? And leave your entire team out of it. If you notice, this is the reason I don't like Cam Newton. If you'll notice, after he scores a touchdown, or after his team scores a touchdown, he runs past all of his teammates to go do his little celebratory dance. He never includes them in anything. He just tries to get away from them and then goes through his whole little thing. And
well, he did it all himself, so, I mean, come on.
That offensive line has nothing to do with my success or my defense or anybody else on the team. So,
you know, interestingly enough, that offensive line was not supposed to be a strength of the team this year, and it has turned out to be worked out pretty well for them. Some of the guys they have in there, let me see if I can take a look at them, because I remember when I was looking at them, I mean, Michael Orr was kind of a guy you said, Amani Silatula was a guy who drafted a few years ago. He'd been kind of banged up. But Ryan Khalil's a nice center. Mike Reimers has done a nice job. I mean, they've just done a nice job on that offensive line, you know, and you got to give them a lot of credit. Carolina, 7 wins last year. Dave Gettleman's done a good job down there as a GM. Joe, I just want to kind of quickly finish off with this. Another great episode of Pro Football View from the East. Got a lot of perspective. This really is an exciting time of the year. Great games, big games, fun to watch. But my last thing to you, and I know that you're a diehard Giants fan and you hate the Cowboys, which is obvious. It'd be like you asking me about the Patriots. Take your blue and red glasses off for a minute and just think of it if you were a fan of some team you didn't care about, the Cowboys. You got to kind of feel a little bit for them with these losing these 6 games straight. I mean, even we were kind of saying, can they hang around with Brandon Weeden or Mac, or wherever they ended up putting, could they hang around and be relevant until Tony Romo came back? We thought they would, and they're on the verge of falling off the cliff. I mean, as a Jet fan, 1999, I was discussing this with you earlier, when Vinny Testaverde went down, that was supposed to be our year, it was supposed to be the year before, and then, you know, now we've got a couple AFC Championship games we've lost. It's just like when you get your opportunity in front of you, and it always just seems like, you know, it just falls apart on you. It's very disappointing. Do you feel at least a little bit bad for the Cowboy fans, or do you just maybe have a wry smile on your face right now?
No, I don't. You know, I celebrate every loss as if it was a giant win. But I think that, like, I don't feel bad for the Joneses because, again, they talk too much. To me, they and Rex would be perfect partners together. I don't feel bad for them in the least. I guess I feel bad for Tony Romo that he took so much heat and so much. We'll never get to the playoffs, and he's no good. And when are we going to get a new quarterback? And now, you know, it took this for them to realize that he's pretty good, and you can't just plug anybody in there. And I think they made huge mistakes. You know, to think that any running back could walk in there and play behind that offensive line has been a completely wrong. You know, Joseph Randall and all his problems, it shows personal problems, will seek into the team and will be an issue. I think it's going to happen with Greg Hardy. I think something's going to happen there where it's not going to end well. You know, the Dez Bryants of the world who you know, get the cue from guys like Terrell Owens, where they think they have to be this diva. I think all that's done with in this league, and so I don't feel bad at all that they kind of it blew up in their face for the decisions they make. Like I said, I kind of feel bad for Tony. I don't like to see anybody get hurt as much as we joke around. But that's it. That's their team. This is like Andrew Luck getting hurt on a really good Colts team. They're not going to be able to survive this. It just shows you. Defense wins, but you still got to be able to score some points, and your offense can't be giving up points. And the fact that they had two guys there, Whedon, as their backup, and then went out and got Matt Cassel, and they've lost every game they've played, goes to show you how important a quarterback is in this league. And, Dennis, nobody knows that more than you, that quarterback's the key to this league. You better have somebody with a little bit of talent in there, and because they can do a lot more damage than they can do good.
Yeah, especially if you, again, I always look at the backup quarterback, something like this. Can you get guy four games? Can he keep you 2-2? Can you keep it that 500 level to keep you in there? Because maybe if it's two backups are built for four to six games, let's say 4-6. Mm-hmm. That's why the backups. They're not. Mm-hmm. Mark Sanchez was the perfect example. Started off 3-1 with the Philadelphia Eagles, finished 1-3. He's built for four games, maybe 5 or 6. He's not built for the long stretch. That's why they're backups. But listen, Joe, I just want to thank you for another fantastic episode. Great insight. You know, it's really exciting time. And we want to just thank people for the downloads and the listens. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at PFVFE, and Joe is at Tufton. So, Joe, thank you very much for another wonderful episode.
Thank you, Dennis. Again, excited. It's playoff time here for high school football and for semi-pro football. So my weekends are taken up with some high-pressure games, and I got asked to do some junior college next year. So keep on moving up the ranks here and see where it takes us.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That's great. Always love getting your perspective on the rules. You are the rules master. So for Joe Tufaro, this is Dennis Agapito. Please join us next for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East.